It was interesting to me. I woke up early this morning because I was thinking about, oh, I have to do something today, and it's early. And then I found myself dozing back sleep and coming in and out of awake, sleep. And I was aware of the thought process that was going on, and my inner guide, my mind, was checking and saying, oh, your back doesn't feel so good. Oh, your feet feel a little sore. I don't know how this is going to go today. After all, you're getting quite elderly now. And it was as if there was somebody lying next to me in the bed. And it continued to go on. And, you know, that was a nice class yesterday, but what did you do with it? You know, you're not really thinking very well, and you never have, actually. You've always had this problem. Now it was going on. And all of a sudden, I became the observer of it, just for a moment, because we so, the connection between the mind and the soul is so intimate that it's almost like we think they're the same thing. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that the problem with Western culture, Western psychology, Western counseling, everything, although those things he wasn't directly referring to, but the problem with Western culture is they mistake the mind for the soul. And so they do band-aids and operations and care and everything for your mind, but it doesn't progress further than that. And if you try to talk about soul and spirit, then people get uncomfortable. And they often say something like, well, that's your belief. And you think, hang on, either it's true or it's not. And they say, well, we don't believe it, as if not believing it makes it untrue. So I was just listening to my mind and thinking, one time, I think it was my son actually, he said, there's a difference between something that you think or do that comes from a place of plenty, abundance, and something that you think or do that's motivated by fear. And with that in my mind, I could see that even my lying down and my not wanting to get up and so on was clearly all coming from the place of fear. And then if you ask yourself in an introspective way, then what's this place of abundance? I always do everything coming from the place of fear, precaution, taking care, making sure that doesn't happen, making sure I'm ready, and if that happens, I'll have this in place, and then that will be there, and so on. So what's this place of abundance? And the place of abundance, essentially, is a place of dependence, which is a very uneasy concept for the soul, because we feel that me and my mind, we've got it, we're doing it, we'll be okay. You know, if I need help, I'll ask for it. I'll thank you for that, and then I'll go on my way again. And so when we come to Krishna, we carry with us this mentality that if I have a problem, I'll pray. If I don't have a problem, I'll just go on because I know what to do. And it's so strong, even as a devotee, that we think that what I'm thinking must be true because I'm thinking it. And if you catch yourself, like I caught myself this morning, listening to this negative presentation of what is and what isn't and what could happen and what might happen and why I should be doing something, then you suddenly feel like this is actually quite uncomfortable. Thank you. Listening to this voice is uncomfortable. And I'm thinking that surrender to Krishna is uncomfortable, but I'm so uncomfortable in my mental state, in relationship to the mind, that I just project that forward everywhere. So then I was thinking about the wonderful classes that we've had, And what particularly came to me was, I think it was my husband was saying, do you trust Krishna? And as devotees, we like to sort of humbly say, well, I'm not that advanced yet. Or we say, yes, I trust Krishna. I'm a devotee. But do you trust him in all phases of time? And I think any one of us, if we're asked that question straight, I think every one of us would have to say, not exactly. I trust him when I see his hand working. When I don't see his hand working, I become afraid. And then I trust either some authority, somebody I've heard of, somebody I've listened to on a YouTube video or something, or my own intelligence or my own experiences of life. I don't go to Krishna then. So I was listening, I was actually not listening, I was reading when I was preparing for these classes from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In 1896, the same year that Srila Prabhupada appeared in this world, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent the very first book in English to the Western world of Sri Chaitanya's teachings, his life and precepts. And so I was looking for something totally different, but I clicked on this and I opened it up, and all of a sudden I thought, oh, this is interesting. This is the very first time that anyone was going to hear about what Lord Chaitanya is teaching. So this was the first time that anyone was going to hear about Lord Chaitanya. And if you take anything that Srila Prabhupada has given us in his Bhaktivedanta purports and you put them side by side, you'll find there's absolutely the same message. However, what's really interesting is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is searching for the right words. Srila Prabhupada, following his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he actually acquired a vocabulary, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and many other terms. They had already been established as a language to explain Krishna consciousness. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he uses terms that are very closer to Christian terms, because he's under the British Raj. And so in India at that time was extremely self-conscious about their own spiritual traditions. And they were trying in every possible way to move towards the British ideal of Christianity from the somewhat primitive mythology of the old Vedic culture. So he says, and I'll see if I can find this because I wrote this down. He was speaking, he writes about 7 or 8 precepts, and anyone who can acquire that on a soft copy because it's readily available should read it because it's really nice. He talks about, in one part, he describes the difference between karma, jnana, and bhakti. And he explains that on the path of karma, which unfortunately we still tend to tread, everything that you do, devotional activities or health-related activities or elevatory activities or helping other people activities, everything you do carries with it the tendency to bring me happiness. I want my own pleasure. That's what I'm working for. So I do this, I do that, I do this, and I'm seen as an unselfish person. But by definition, my pleasure is the inspiration for what I'm trying to achieve. He said the path of jnana is a little bit higher than that, because somebody who has that intelligence, they see that no matter how hard I try to make myself happy, it doesn't work. And why doesn't it work? Because this world is made of this duality. Every single thread of the material world carries two faces. So the same thing, even we heard, although it's transcendental, Krishna was lamenting and saying, how is it that the moon can make me so unhappy? Now Krishna, when he says that, he's the master of the moon, so he's enacting a beautiful drama, but not us. How is it that I can wake up in the morning after a very nice class, very enlivened, and be thinking my back aches and, what am I going to do if this happens, and so on? So the more intelligent man or woman sees that actually this place doesn't really work. It's not working for me. It's not actually producing unalloyed happiness. And so they think, let me try to understand what's beyond this place. So they study, even they study the Bhagavatam. They study, they're poring over the literature, but in their mind they're thinking, if I become good at this, this will give me a relief. It'll give me a release. It will free me from the mind going round and round and the suffering of the body. It will make me feel... Salvation is the term he uses. It will get me out of here. And so as beginning devotees, we also have that. Because we've come with these tendencies. So he says that the principle of bhakti, because now we're speaking about bhakti, and it doesn't mean that the jnana level or the karma level, you're not producing devotional activities, but because they're interlaced with this sense of my own happiness is the primary thing, they can't attract Krishna in the way that we want to attract his attention. Why? Because we're doing it for us. So he's like, that's good, keep going, you're on the right track. But you have to come up, you have to become free of this tendency to only be thinking of yourself and the benefit of yourself. So that's not easy. And so if any of you are thinking, my gosh, that sounds really hard, I sympathize with you, I feel the same way. But here's the principle of bhakti, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives it. The principle of bhakti is sincere and entire dependence on the deity in every act of life. I'll read that again. The principle of bhakti is sincere and entire, complete dependence on the deity in every act of life. So we can see why Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that bhakti is extremely rare. And it also, in one way, it's discouraging that, I can't do that. And in another way, it's actually encouraging because we are on the path to this. And imagine if we had entire dependence on Krishna in every act of our lives. How peaceful we would be, even in turmoil. And how naturally we would turn to him, more naturally than a young baby cries out for their mother. He continues, the principle of duty. Now, he also explains there are four reasons why people approach Krishna. And the first one is fear. The second one is seeking gain. The third one is out of a sense of duty. So that one, he says, that's okay. The other two, he says, they're despicable. And then he says the fourth one is out of spontaneous and natural love. So he says the principle of duty is no part of bhakti, as it acts as gratitude for favors. Gratitude for favors obtained. That's not bhakti. That's very sobering, I found, because at best, you know, I'm lying in bed saying my back aches and I think, no, you have to get up. You have to show up. You have to do your duty. Then I go, oh, that's not even acceptable as the highest point of bhakti. So duty acts as gratitude for favors obtained and works like an obligation. I'm obliged to get up. I don't want to get up. Which is contrary to natural love. And then he points out that the fault of the jnani who's seeking liberation is that it's a very petty thing, because liberation is just automatic with bhakti. You don't even have to think about that, because everything is taken care of by this one principle of sincere and entire dependence on the deity in every act of life. Now, one time I remember I was in Melbourne, Australia, and I was talking to a girl. She was from Malaysia. And as far as I remember, she was a devotee, but not a very serious one. And she was trying to stay in Australia. She didn't want to go back to Malaysia. So I asked her, why do you want to stay in Australia? And she said, well, she said, Malaysia's a Muslim country. I said, yes. And then she looked at me in a kind of way that stayed with me over probably 15 years. She said, do you know what it means to be a Muslim? And I said, no. And she looked at me, she said, there's no deity. And she kept saying it, there's no deity. They have no deity. There's no deity. And she was getting more and more disturbed. And she wasn't even a serious devotee. But the concept that there was no deity was so shocking to her, and she lived there. And I remember going back to my room and thinking, there's no deity, there's no deity. You know, sometimes we're in a situation and it's somewhere and there's no deity and we just go on. And then I started thinking, what would it be like if there was no deity? And we should all think on this. You have a look over here and you see Giriraj times 7 or 8 or 9. And look at each one. Each one is individually decorated by someone. And each of the people who are worshipping Giriraj have gone somewhere and bought something and said, this will look really nice on my Giriraj. Instead of going shopping and thinking, this will look really nice on me, which they may also be doing, this, what they have chosen for Giriraj, is for Giriraj's pleasure. This is the process of development of bhakti. It's very important. Bhaktivinoda Thakur defines shraddha. We use the word faith. He says, shraddha consists of three things. One, faith in the supreme beauty of the deity. Faith in the supreme beauty of the deity. We say, you know, faith in God, and faith that I'll be protected, and faith that the world will go on. But faith in the supreme beauty of the deity. One. Second, a desire for the eternal, unselfish service of that being. And three, consequent repulsion for every other thought of pleasure or self-aggrandizement. These are the characteristics of shraddha. I'll read them again. One, faith in the supreme beauty of the deity. Two, a desire for the eternal, unselfish service of that being. And three, consequent as a result of that service to that being, repulsion for every other thought of pleasure or self-aggrandizement. And then if you want to know, he said, so what builds one's faith? He said, the thing that builds one's faith is actually a hankering for bhakti. He said, good work is the prime moving principle. He said, there's two kinds of good work. There's moral good work, helping others, doing good deeds and so forth. And the other one is acts which have a tendency to bring about spiritual culture. Or acts which have a tendency to bring about spiritual culture. So that's why we come here. That's why we come by the side of Giriraj. And we try our hardest while we're here. And we'll often feel like there's an eternity between us and bhakti. And that feeling is very healthy. That feeling promotes bhakti. So we shouldn't, when our mind, because it's our mind, when our mind says, you're just so stupid, you just can't get anything right, look at you, you've been a devotee for such and such amount of time, and you're still like this, and worse, I know so many people your age, at your stage, who are doing so much better than you. When the mind says those things, we actually need to say thank you. It's true. It's true. And then what happens is oftentimes the mind will then be silent. Because the mind acts in such a way, when we're cultivating bhakti, the mind acts as an indicator, sometimes of our material side, and sometimes it acts as an indicator of what Krishna, as our real inner guide, wants us to know. So this is, of course, a very mysterious subject, and I'd love to talk about it more, but I really want to get on with something else. So we're going to be going to the place of Mukhara. And when we get there, if I'm not mistaken, it will be a little chaotic. It's a village. So villages are always at least a little chaotic. So I had something I wanted to share with you before we went. Let me just find it. This always happens. Does this happen to everyone? That when you want to share something, that's the last thing you can find? Even if you had it with you a minute before, it just seems to vanish. And let me see if I can find it. This is what I would like to share with you, if you don't mind. It's a little play, which... Just a second, let me see if I can find it. Not there. Which is part of a big play, which is interesting in itself. And if I can't find it, I'll have to find the big play, which will take a lot longer. Just a second. It's part of a little play that Purnamasi wants to present. Because what has happened is that Krishna has left Vrindavan. There couldn't be anything sadder than that. And we all feel for the gopis because we know how much they couldn't live without, even just a blink of their eyes seemed like an eternity. So we can't even imagine if Krishna actually left and he wouldn't be there the next morning or the morning after or the morning after that. So our eyes fill with tears for the position of those beautiful young girls. And sometimes we forget, or some of us do, what it was like for Krishna. Because he's the one who left. That means he didn't take with him his entourage. It was only he went. And later Mother Mangal came to join him. So Purnamasi, orchestrates beyond just Vrindavan. She orchestrates in all of Krishna's lila. So Purnamasi decided that the best way when somebody is grieving for the loss of a friend is, and this may not work for us, is to share with them something about that friend. I mean, I would think that would make me cry more. But she is thinking that this is how she can pacify Krishna. So along with our friend Mukhara, elderly Purnamasi and elderly Mukhara, they go to Mathura. And Purnamasi, with the help of Narada Muni, who's her spiritual master, she arranges for some Gandharvikas to come, Gandharvas. And they are going to present a play of Krishna's lila in Vrindavan. So let us begin. So the sutradhar, which is like the stage manager who introduces the play, he comes onto the stage. Now, watching this play, there's no indication how many other people there were, but there's Krishna and Madhur Mangal watching the play. And the sutradhara comes in and says, "O noble lady, Narada Muni, the spiritual master of the demigods, has sent me from Swagaloka to worship Krishna with this beautifully written play of the name The Meeting with Radha. Let the auspicious introduction now be sung." He says, "You have spoken the introduction very well. And the meaning is, even though old Jotila continuously tries to stop them, Krishna eternally pleases Radha with transcendental pastimes." So eternally pleases means, of course, that even after Krishna is no longer visibly present in Vrindavan, these leelas never stop. So then the first actor comes in, and he's Madhava. He looks like he's playing the part of Krishna. He says, "Accompanied by its friend, the southern breeze, beautiful springtime is happy. Charming with jubilant bees, birds, Vrindavan's forest smiles. If Radha were to meet me here, I would be plunged into the crashing waves of the ocean of intensely blissful pastimes." Now, the audience is watching this, right? Who is the audience? Krishna. So Madhur Mangal starts laughing. And he says, "Look, these demigod actors have created a double of my dear friend Krishna." And Krishna says, "My dear friend, this dramatic actor appears like a second form of my own self. Am I that actor on the stage? Or am I the person observing him from the audience? I cannot decide. With unblinking eyes, I stare at the great wonder before me. The actor speaks. Now I am separated from my beloved, and I long to meet her. I will place my request before Lalita. And then the actor takes his flute and he starts playing the flute and says, "Oh, Lalita, please bring before me Brishabhanu's beautiful daughter, Radha." Krishna is watching this. He says, "What is impossible for mercy? By the mercy of Narada, this actor is able to reveal the innermost feelings of my heart, which remain unknown to others." He keeps watching. And on the stage, followed by Lalita, Radha enters. She looks around and says, "Oh, Lalita, look. These waves are auspicious. A female swan just trapped in a saivala vine is now free. And now the swan goes to meet her lover in the garden of lotus petals." Lalita smiles and she says, "O female swan, this garland of waves has great love for the king of swans, and that is why these waves pull you in this way. Have faith and go and meet your lover." Krishna is watching this. He says, "No one has suffered as I. For a long time I have been tormented by the flames of separation from Radha. And now lotus-eyed Radha, who is a lake where the swan of my heart enjoys pastimes, has now appeared before me." And he jumps up and he runs forward towards the actress. Uddhava says, "My lord, this is a scene in a play." Krishna becomes embarrassed and a little sober. He says, "Her face is so beautiful. It stops poets from glorifying the autumn moon. Her restless glance has a sweetness sought by the most charming, passionate does. Her eyebrows are like Kama's bow. This charming actress destroys my peacefulness just as Radha does." And then in the audience jumps up Mukara. She has come along with Purnamasi. And she jumps up and she goes, "Oh, granddaughter Radha, you are alive." Because in the Leela of Lalita Madhava, Srimati Radharani, when Krishna leaves, she walks into the Jamuna River and disappears. And Mukara becomes so crazy, like, "My granddaughter has drowned," that she's ready herself to jump into the water and drown herself. But a voice stops her, and the voice tells her, "Don't do something crazy. In the future, there will be great happiness." And so Mukara lives with this, that Radha has gone, she has gone. And now she's saying, "Here she is, she's alive." And she rushes forward and Purnamasi grabs the end of her garment and says, "A woman blinded by love, this is a Gandhava actor in a play." And Mukara bursts into tears and she says, "Oh, noble lady, I think Radha must have left the sun planet and gone elsewhere. I think the Gandhavas in Swagaloka, the Gandhavas have now brought her back to this place, and now she stands before us." Then in the play, this is fascinating, Radha says, "Oh, Lalita, did noble Mukara see me as you brought me from my home to pick these flowers? And Lalita says, "Noble Makara was not the only one who saw you. Jatila saw you as well." And Makara in the audience says, oh child, in truth I was very cruel. I made you burn in the flames of suffering." Because Makara is always keeping an eye on Radha and making sure when Krishna comes along, she takes Radha away. She's one of the primary obstacles in the meetings between Radha and Krishna. Makara. Jyotila is number one on the list. She's always there, as you'll hear in this little play. But Makara is also, she's much more gentle. She's always on Radha's side, but she doesn't want Krishna to pollute her granddaughter. So Mother Mangal turns around to her in the audience and says, "You old demoness, do not put on this false show of love. Whenever you saw me near the boundary of the garden," because he's Krishna's messenger, "by the garden of your house, you would bark at me as if you had become a dog." And Makara is crying and she says, "Noble Madhu Mangal, what could I have done? I did not know your secret. Noble Purnamasi cheated me." And the play, Radha says, "If I was actually seen by them, tell me what to do." And Lalita says, "Slowly walking, Radha, let's leave the open road and run on the Kadamba forest path by the Jamuna's shore." So they're disappearing. And Radha says, "Why should I wear these ankle bells? They're like traitors, because tinkle, 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 everybody hears her coming." So then Lalita says, "Jatila is very quick. We must fool her, quick." Then Jatila walks in. Jatila says, "Why has Radha, the daughter of Maharaj Bishabhanu, not appeared before my eyes? Where will I search for her?" So she looks around here, she looks around there, and she looks on the ground and she becomes very happy and she says, "Aha, I see girls' footprints. And I know they are her footprints because they bear the auspicious marks of her ankle bells. I will search for her on this path." Radha and Lalita are rushing away. And Radha says, "Last night I saw something very unusual in a dream." Lalita says, "What was it?" Radha says, "You were picking flowers in the grove of clove vines when a Vrindavan Vasi, who walked like a mad elephant, suddenly put his hand on yours, and you struggled to escape, but..." Lalita said, "Oh, honest girl, you fell asleep and enjoyed pastimes with this elephant hero in your dream." So they're speaking about Krishna. Jyotila is fast behind. She says, "Those swans are running from the waters of the Jamuna into the forest." She sees the swans getting out of the water and running into the forest. She said they must have been attracted by the tinkling of ankle bells. This girl cannot be very far away. And in the audience, Uddhava, who's sitting with Krishna and Madam Mangal, says, "Aha, this old lady is very intelligent." Lalita says, "Madhava may be in this cottage of Madhavi vines before us." And then Madhava enters. He says, "If the many things that bring a great festival of transcendental happiness to my heart were increased without limit, they would not equal the happiness I feel by meeting Radha. If my desire to see Radha is even slightly fulfilled, I taste an unparalleled intense bliss that makes me at once forget the entire world." Krishna, watching Madhava in the play, looks at Purnamasi and he says, "Oh, affectionate Purnamasi, in all ways you are very expert at pleasing me. You are more expert than even your spiritual master, Narada. By the trick of this dramatic performance, you have made me again enter my very rare and difficult to attain Gokul pastimes. So Radha sees that Madhava in the play has arrived, and she's very shy, and Madhava is looking at her, and she's looking very shy. And then comes a beautiful verse which Srila Prabhupada translates from the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. This is Lalita speaking. She says, "O most beautiful friend, please accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is standing here before you in full transcendental bliss. The borders of his eyes roam from side to side, and his eyebrows move slowly like bumblebees on his lotus face. Standing with his right foot placed below the knee of his left leg, the middle of his body curved in three places, and his neck gracefully tilted to the side, he takes his flute to his pursed lips and moves his fingers upon it here and there." This is a verse by Srila Rupa Goswami. It's a very beautiful verse that Srila Rupa Goswami quotes when Lord Chaitanya asks him to present his poetic work to Srila Ramananda Roy, who is a great playwright as well. And sometimes in this world we find when one expert meets another expert, they're very appreciative. And sometimes we find when one expert meets another expert, they feel challenged. Like, uh-oh, I have to do something about this. But in this case, Ramananda Roy, when he hears the poetic work of Srila Rupa Goswami, he's actually stunned. Now, here comes Jatila. She sees, there's Radha. And then she says, "Oh, girl, expert at uniting lovers, now that my son is far away," he's talking to Lalita, "why did you bring her here? Why did you let her leave the house?" Talking to Lalita. Lalita's very frightened. She says, "I am burned by this wicked old witch." And then she openly says, that's what she says to herself. Then she openly says, "Oh, noble lady, Gargi said that if we worship the sun god with Madhavi flowers, he would bestow upon us millions of Surabhi cows. For this reason, I brought Radha to this Madhavi bower. Be kind to us, please. Be kind." Jyotila is funny. Jyotila thinks she's going to conceal her real intention and she's going to pretend some affection. So she says, "My child, this girl Radha, tells my son that you encourage her to meet with Krishna. My child says she continually defames you in this way. Will you forgive her offense?" Lalita says, "This is a trick." So then Madhava says, "When the heart yearns for something, many great obstacles will stand in its way. That is not a lie." Then glancing at Radha from the corner of his eye, Madhava moves further, closer to her, and Jyotila places the forefinger on the tip of her nose and shaking her head, "No, no, 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 no. You debauchee snake," she says. "You are fond of attacking young girls. Why have you come here to bite?" And Madhava says, "Fat lips, I have come here to bite you, the witch of Vraj. And Uddhava starts to laugh in the audience. And this is really wonderful, Krishna says. He turns to Uddhava in the audience, in Mathura, and he says, my dear friend, the sweetly worded prayers of the great sages, the sweetly worded prayers of the great sages do not please me as much as these harsh words of the old ladies of Gokul. I'll read that again. The first time I read this, in I think it's in Nectar of Devotion, it's a similar verse. I was like, what? All those great sages are offering their beautiful prayers and chanting their mantras and ringing their bells and doing everything exactly right. And Krishna is calling, Madhava in the play is calling Jyotila fat lips, or saying your breasts are like string beans, and making, ridiculing her. And he's saying, the sweetly worded prayers of the great sages do not please me as much as these harsh words of the old ladies in Gokul. Vrinda steps in and says, elderly lady, why do you accuse Krishna? He is like the moonlight that sustains all religious principles. Why do you accuse him of being a debauchee? Ha! Jyotila laughs ironically and then she says, who does not know how the glories of Prince Krishna's adulterous pastimes with others' wives have so nicely decorated the earth planet? This debauchee Krishna stops chaste girls on the road. Oh, obeisances to Lord Vishnu. Doesn't want to say anymore. And then she says, oh, beautiful, bewildered girl, a sharp, crooked, sharp glance from this black snake, Krishna, has the power to shatter thunderbolts to pieces. You are an austere, chaste young girl, as delicate as a malika flower. Why stay here any longer? Let us quickly go home. And Jyotila turns and marches out with Lalita and Radha. Now, I'm not going to continue the rest of this story as reading it, but I'll tell you what happens next. Vrinda says, don't worry, because Krishna, Madhava, who's playing the part, is looking very discouraged at what has just happened. So Vrinda says, don't worry, I have a plan. I have one female parrot. I will go and speak to Lalita about this, don't worry. And so Madhava is feeling so sad that he has missed this opportunity with Radha. And meanwhile, Abhimanyu comes in and he says, I will take gold and purchase 300 new cows. Where's my mother gone? Looking for Jyotila, because Abhimanyu is the son of Jyotila. And Abhimanyu, should understand, is an arrangement of Yoga Maya to create another obstacle. So we, in our budding Krishna consciousness, I don't think we're welcoming obstacles very much. We're kind of wishing they weren't there, because we're not so strong that we can say, put obstacles in front of me and I'll happily accept as many obstacles as you can provide. We're not on that pathway yet. But in the transcendental plane, obstacles just increase the joy of meeting. There's nothing that doesn't serve Krishna's pleasure. This is the very important thing to keep teaching yourself. Wash your brain with this. There's nothing in Vrindavan that does not serve Krishna's pleasure. Even if he makes us unhappy, we should say, if this is your pleasure to make us unhappy, then so be it, because I'm your servant. That's not an easy prayer, and I don't expect that any of us will be able to remember it all the time. But it must be there somewhere, that everything in Vrindavan is meant for Krishna's pleasure. Okay, so Jyotila comes in and she says, I heard a female parrot talking to a male parrot saying that Krishna is coming to my house in disguise as my son. And so I will go there and see what's going on. And she goes back, and there's Abhimanyu come to get his money, to buy the cows, get some gold. And Jyotila comes in, and she's furious. And she starts calling him terrible names. And it's very, very confusing to him. He doesn't know what's happening. And she's saying, you're a debauchee, and you defile the girls of Gokul, and you plunder other people's houses, and Abhimanyu doesn't know what to do, and he covers his head because he says, my mother's gone crazy, and he's trying to run away, and she's saying, why do you cover your face? Don't cover your face. You know, you can't tell us any of your, I know your tricks. And Abhimanyu's going, oh, my mother's gone insane. This is so embarrassing. Oh, no, I've got to go. And he ran away. Jyotila runs after him, pulling his cloth. I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. You can't run away. And he's all gone. But then, right before he leaves, the other ladies who are with Jyotila, they recognize that this is Abhimanyu. This is nobody else than Abhimanyu. And they start to laugh. They're laughing as Jyotila is calling him names and names. And then he runs. And her friend said, he says to Abhimanyu, your mother's really gone crazy. She thinks that you're Krishna. Well, then when she realizes what has happened, she's very embarrassed. And she doesn't want to come and see him and apologize because she's too embarrassed. But Abhimanyu said, that's okay. I will take the gold coins I need and I'll go on with my business. So he leaves. So Krishna's watching this and he's laughing and he's saying, O king of counselors, these demigod actors have brought me so much bliss. And then he's disguised as Abhimanyu. And so he comes in and Radha is a little bit worried, but then she realizes who it is. And she realizes it's Krishna in disguise. And she's very shy, and she says to herself, I do not like to hear that Abhimanyu has come, but now that this Abhimanyu is my lover Krishna, the news delights me. And then Madhava says, Lalita, my greatest treasure has come again in my hand. And then everybody is struck with wonder. Jyotila enters and she says, my dear girl, because you are so intelligent, you have placed yourself on the path that leads to my son's eyes. Because she's made a fool of herself with Abhimanyu, and now she sees Abhimanyu and she thinks that Krishna is Abhimanyu, and she becomes very pleased. She says, son Abhimanyu, I cannot see very well. It is dusk. And Abhimanyu or Madhava says, mother, I shall give you an ointment that will enable you to see everything very perfectly. And his meaning is, I shall give you an ointment that will make you completely blind. And then Krishna, watching this, he says, oh, you have brought me to the shore of the ocean of my pastimes in Gokul. And Jyotila says, why did you call me? And Madhava says, my daughter-in-law, Madhava disguised as Abhimanyu, says, my daughter-in-law does not want to go under the Chaitya tree to do some puja. Jyotila says, Radha, you are my daughter. You must obey my words. I order you to go at once with your husband. At once. And Radha says, just see how wonderful are the workings of destiny. Then she says, Lalita, I'm feeling ill. please tell this to Jyotila. And Jyotila says, oh, saintly daughter, I swear that you are saintly. And then Madhava says, Lalita, tonight we will stay awake all night in the auspicious, this is Madhava disguised as Abhimanyu, says in the play, we will stay awake all night in the auspicious temple in the forest grove. You bring the sandalwood perfume, and when Radha is nicely decorated, I will meet her there. And all the actors leave the stage. And Krishna, in Mathura, he offers his respectful obeisances to Purnamasi, and he says, O noble lady, I am burning with suffering. I cannot find any peace of mind. What will I do? So this is a little introduction for you to the playful, humorous, not serious but serious, loving exchanges of the young gopis and Krishna and Mukara, Jyotila and the other elderly ladies who act as obstacles, watchdogs to see that Radha and Krishna should never meet. Now what I would like to do now is for us to all get in the bus and we'll go to Mukara's place. Before we get there, I'll let you know there's three temples, 1, 2, 3, right beside a kund. I think it's called Suraj Kund. And the first temple where you first drive into this area is not the one that we want to go to. It's a small temple. And then the next one is very nice, but it doesn't even have a courtyard. It's a Giriraj temple. So we'll stop by there and offer respects. And then we head to the third one, which is still going to be extremely tight for all of us to fit in. But then in the third one, which is the temple that has Mukara, Radharani, and Kirtida, we'll go into there and then our overspill, and even if, yes, we should leave now, and even if there's not enough room, you can sit on the side of Suraj Kund. I wanted to mostly share something with you here whilst we don't have the distractions of children, dogs, and everything else that goes on once you come into a village atmosphere. Just in case it's hard for hearing there, at least you've all had something to pay attention to. And then we should offer donations at the first temple. I think the best thing, if you can remember, is to go backwards to the second, the Giriraj temple, so we save a little time. And then, if you like, you can go into the first temple. It's a Banki Bihari temple. It's a small temple, a little bit run down, but I think that they would also appreciate donations. Okay, all right. So are we ready? Okay, let's go. Hare Krishna.